Imagine the king of the universe becoming one of that created. If you've ever made something yourself, created something, imagine becoming that. I know I've created different things and made things out of clay or wood or whatever. I would never want to be even look like some of the things I've made. But Jesus was willing to do that. And stepping into a human nature, we've got the God who creates, was there helping create the universe, is born and cannot feed himself. The one that is all-knowing has to learn to walk and talk. If you think of the step down, it would be quite a step down for us, say, to become a slug or a worm or a flea. Would you consider doing that? I wouldn't. The step down Jesus took was even greater. And when he becomes human, it's not just any old human. If you think of humans in the world, there's all kinds of positions. He didn't even come and become a king here on earth because there are human kings. He became a servant, the lowest. One thing I read said this could almost be translated as slave. I'm not sure if that's quite correct, Pastor, but think of it as on the bottom rung of humanity. That's where Jesus places himself and then became obedient to death. To be willing to die for ones that don't know about him, don't care about him, are even his enemies. And it's not just death, it's death on a cross. That was considered the worst possible death sentence someone could have. I think crucifixion could last up to a week. And it was a very slow suffocation. For Jesus to be willing to be crucified, and he knew that was coming. He told the disciples, this is what's going to happen. To be willing to place himself in that position. The people of Philippi, probably many of these in the Philippian church were probably Roman citizens, or at least maybe belonged to a Roman citizen if they were slaves. But they realized just how low a position that is. And this was even written about before, going back to Isaiah, where it says he was poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. Jesus died with two criminals, and his position in the middle puts him as the lowest of the three. So it's the worst possible place. And he humbled himself and was willing to do that. So quite a contrast to being, as God, King of the universe. Any thoughts? Starting
Well,
in verse.
just Mira, I was just going to add, it's interesting that they chose this epistle for Palm Sunday. Why would they do that? Well, Jesus comes riding in, not with a tank and war horses and power, but he comes riding in on a donkey. And so it's speaking all the things that you have just shared, where Jesus is God but comes and serves. So, yeah, it's neat how the lessons always tie together.
And as we go into Holy Week, this Friday, Good Friday for us, a terrible Friday for God. And even all the pain, the suffering on the cross, I imagine the slow suffocation, the nails through the hands and the feet grinding was probably not the worst part, but the weight of the sin of the world on him, all of that pressing down, so that Even the Roman guards are surprised when he dies after 6 hours. I used to, I think the first school I taught at, we started at 9 a.m. and ended in 3 p.m. Just happens to be the time span that Jesus spent on the cross. I could not imagine spending that time suffering, but he was willing to do it. But then we get to verse 9. And you know, everything up until this is the humiliation of Jesus. But in verse 9, therefore God exalted him to the highest places and gave him a name that is above every name. Now we get to the exaltation. The one thing it doesn't say here is that Jesus stopped being man. I've read different things that one of the common teachings with some church or ancient churches, I guess, was that when Jesus rose, he rose as God, but not man. Thinking, okay, he gave up the humanity part. He didn't. He was just resurrected by the Father and given the highest place possible, a name that is above every name. He had accomplished everything that he was supposed to do here on earth. You know, as he's on the cross, you know, it's one of the last things he says, it's finished. And now, you know, everything can, you know, everything from here on is, you know, a step up. Even the descent into hell to preach to the ones there. And I imagine to let Satan also know you lost, God won. Exalted back.
Merv, I have a question.
Yes.
It says, therefore God exalted him. You know, I've heard often that, you know, God the Father resurrected Jesus, but Jesus was God too. And why do we assume it was the Father that resurrected him rather than the Trinity that resurrected him? I don't know. It's just confusing to my mind.
Yeah. Well, if Jesus was fully dead, would he be able to bring himself back?
Well, he was still God.
You know, it's one of the mysteries here is, you know, it's part of the thing with the Trinity. How can we have both Father and Son and one God? You know, that one of the things that's kind of unique here is that Paul is quoting or takes a passage from Isaiah 45, one of the passages that the Jews used to, to say God is one. There's only one God. We've got it here. And starting verse 22-24, says, I am God. No, this is God speaking through the prophet Isaiah. I am God and there is no other. By myself I have sworn, my mouth has uttered in all integrity, and a word will not be revoked. Before me every knee will bow, by me every tongue will swear. They will say of me, the Lord alone is righteous, and or in the Lord alone are righteousness and strength. So that part about every knee will bow comes from Isaiah. And borrowing this passage that's used to talk about the oneness of God, also talking about Jesus in that same context. So the Father, the Son are one. How that can be is beyond my mind, but I know there's a lot of stuff that I don't understand. So if I don't understand how this can be, that's not a big deal. If the only thing that could be would be things that I could grasp or human understanding could grasp, that places a lot of limits on what could be, what is truth. God's mind is far beyond mine, far beyond any human's. In heaven, maybe we'll be able to understand it. You're in, yes, Lindy.
To my mind, it's also a difficult thing for my human mind to figure out, because it isn't something that we understand. But I think that what we have to do is it's a matter of belief. You know, if you see things with your eyes and you hear things, you understand what they are because you're there, you're seeing them, you're hearing them. But a belief is something beyond that. It's something that is not tangible in a way. You can't put your finger on it and say it's like this, it's like that. And if you don't accept that as a belief, then you don't believe. That's what I think.
Yeah. Paul talks about doing things by faith. This is one of those. We understand this by faith, not by reason.
Yeah, my question, Merv, really was, why did Paul choose those words, therefore God exalted him, instead of just recognizing that Jesus was exalted and rose from the dead, you know, through his power as God? I'm not sure there's a good answer to it. It seems like an odd choice of words to me.
That's the part that kept me thinking. It was the Father that resurrected Jesus. You know, the Father exalts him, brings him back, and you know, puts him in his right position as God, God as King of the universe.
Well, you know,
Wendy.
Yeah, when Jesus was baptized, they heard God saying, "This is my Son,"
mm-hmm.
and that sounds like two separate people. Two separate entities. And it's kind of the same thing that Bill is saying, in a way.
Yeah.
You know. So it's a similar situation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you reconcile? There's God somewhere, you know, around. I think omnipresent. I don't think he necessarily sits on a golden throne above the clouds, but he's omnipresent, he's everywhere. But he's recognizing that person there in the water is my Son. And is that a separate person or is that the same person? You know?
Yeah. Pastor, you had something or?
Oh, you know, I was reading some wild, crazy stuff this week. And actually that wild and crazy stuff was I was reading St. Augustine. I wouldn't put that on anyone to do that for fun. But Augustine says, he has a really interesting argument that I'm really chewing on. Augustine says that actually, if you believe in a, like Islam, if you believe in a only one God, the Christian God is triune. He says there's a real weakness in the God of Islam because it's only one. Whereas, of course, as Christians, we believe in one God, but our God was in a relationship, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, so that when he came to earth, he could relate to us in a relationship kind of manner, whereas the religions that only have and really hold to monotheism, the God can't relate at all with human beings because it's not a relational kind of God. So anyways, that kind of blew my mind. Now, Augustine's not always right on everything, I will say that, but it was a very interesting argument. I'll just throw that in just for thought.
Yeah.
You know, on that line, it's a lot of the Old Testament is how God is so powerful and something to be feared. The mm-hmm. Jewish people believed only in one God, and that God, if you didn't believe in that God, you were in dire trouble. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any, as you just mentioned, there was hardly any relationship between the God figure and the human, you know.
So, yeah.
Except that in the Genesis, it says God made us in his likeness. But that's not a relationship. That's not the same kind of relationship, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. If you're going back into Genesis, God says, let us make man in our image, or why us, not me. But it's the relationship there between man and God. With most religions, it's they worship the God strictly out of fear, afraid of their God. It's if you look at the idols that people have built over the centuries, just the look on the face is one to frighten. I would not want to have only that kind of a relationship with a God. A God of love, a God of mercy, but one that we have to take by faith. So the one that was lowest, the lowest of humans, now is placed higher than any. It says, gave him the name that is above every name. It doesn't mean that the name Jesus is better than any other name. It's primarily his role as Savior, Redeemer. That part is above any other. So at the name Merv, of Jesus.
Okay. Yes. Merv, can I ask you a question, a personal question? Mm-hmm. You've been teaching you've taught and been a principal for a long time. Has anyone ever come to faith in your teaching and relationships based on an explanation of the Trinity? I'm just curious about that. Or was it more understanding the relational aspect of God that it's just clicked with them that, wow, God sent his son Jesus. And maybe, I don't know. I'm just curious if explanations have really moved people to be, whoa, I finally get it.
Yeah, I don't think I could explain the Trinity in any way close that would make them, oh, yeah, I get that. I don't get it. Yeah. It's the relationship with people. Am I would have a hard time saying, have I brought anybody to faith? I don't know. But God put me in a position where, tell his message. I know my dad, I know of at least two. He wanted to be a pastor at one time. That wasn't possible. So he tried being a farmer, and he was pretty much a failure at that. But he was a great barber. And, having someone, sitting in a chair, and he's either holding a razor or clippers. And the one thing my dad loved was to talk. Growing up, I thought he knew everyone in town. He didn't. He just talked to everyone in town. And he talked to every person that sat in his chair, whether they said anything or not.
Hey, Clayton.
And there were at least two that he knew started to believe. How many others? I don't know. But, it was the relationship there.
I just want to say, Merv, I too haven't ever explained God, and it's like, wow, I get it. That's never happened to me. But I do want to just uplift you. Your presence and just who you are, that really exhibits God-like attributes. And so I see that in you. I just want to say that.
No, thank you very much. So we have Jesus comes to the world, kind of turns everything upside down. And the disciples later on are going to be accused of turning the world upside down. Actually, I think they turned the world right side up. Sin turned it upside down. And we are so used to seeing things upside down, we think that's correct. Actually, if you think of how you see, the lens in our eyes puts an inverted image on our retina. So we are literally seeing the world upside down. And our mind just kind of flips that, thinking, oh, this is the correct way. Jesus comes along and shows us what is true. We think selfishly, God comes along and says it's selfless, not selfish. Humans seem to love sin and hate sinners. God says, no, you hate the sin and love the sinners. So it's, you know, everything reversed from what we would think. So we've got, you know, every tongue can confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of the Father, which I think is cool. Not to the glory of Jesus, but the glory of the Father. And at this point, oh, I see we're a little bit over. This next week is Easter Sunday. There won't be a Bible class. For the Sundays after Easter, Pastor will be leading the Bible class. And I believe that is on some signs in John. The seven signs in John. So we will pick things up 2 weeks from today. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Okay. Bye.